This is Terry Bush with the Daily Pantograph, dated Monday, May 12, 2025. We begin on the front page with the headline, Mother Nature Gains Ground. Illinois State Park saw more visitors in 2024 than at any point in the past 15 years, according to new data from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Illinois' 290 state parks and 56 historic sites recorded more than 41 million visitors last year, which was the most in 15 years, following several significant capital projects to upgrade and improve many of the parks. Interest in state parks has been growing since the pandemic. Illinois Department of Natural Resources Director Natalie Phelps Finney said in an interview, "During COVID, people were stir-crazy, shut in, and they once again realized how important nature is to all of us." An aggressive advertising campaign by the state has also helped, she said. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity launched the state's Middle of Everything marketing campaign in 2022, which promotes tourism at the state's top recreation and cultural attractions in TV commercials, billboards, and online advertising. Starved Rock State Park in LaSalle County topped the list in 2024, with 2.4 million visitors coming to explore the canyons and waterfalls nestled in gorges along the Illinois River in north-central Illinois. The second most visited park last year was Illinois Beach State Park near Zion, with 2 million visitors. IDNR completed a $73 million project last year to preserve the park from erosion. Phelps Finney said it's always been a high number of visitors, but certainly the uptick we've seen since the beach was restored and since the resort is being invested in once again and remodeled. Beach State Park holds Illinois' only undeveloped stretch of Lake Michigan shoreline, but it's subject to the ferocious waves of the lake. The conditions have sometimes eroded up to 100 feet of shoreline a year in parts of the park. To preserve the park's shoreline, IDNR's project included building 22 breakwater structures in the lake to decrease the power of the waves hitting the shore. Several of the structures are entirely submerged, while others that poke out of the surface of the lake are designed to provide nesting for migratory birds. The project also included extending the public beach further into Lake Michigan. Erosion had diminished the beach to come within feet of the parking lot and hotel at the park. The state also announced earlier this year it will put $60 million toward deferred maintenance projects. More than half of that will go to Starved Rock for trail improvements, facility renovations, and building a new wastewater system. The department is also working on adding electric vehicle chargers at state parks and renovating the old state capitol in Springfield. This summer, IDNR plans to restore and upgrade the Crenshaw House in Gallatin County to include a visitor center at a location on the reverse Underground Railroad where slaves were held. According to IDNR, John Crenshaw used slaves at his southern Illinois home where he manufactured salt. Crenshaw is also believed to have kidnapped, freed, or escaped slaves to sell them back to slavery in the South. Phelps Finney said, "We're excited that the investment is being made and these parks are getting the attention they deserve." Lincoln's New Salem historic site in Petersburg, where the 16th president lived in his 20s, was the state's most visited historic site last year, with 360,000 visitors. The site is in line for funding to repair aging buildings. IDNR announced in March that it will invest $8 million to repair up to 23 replica log buildings at the site that depict how the village looked when Lincoln lived there in the 1830s. Phelps Finney said, "You have things fall into disrepair, and then it dominoes, it builds. So what was once maybe $100 million or so is now a little over $1 billion worth of deferred maintenance across IDNR's properties." Continuing on the front page, we have the headline, "GOP eyes more taxes on college endowments." Donald Trump's feud with America's elite universities is lending momentum to Republicans on Capitol Hill who want to increase a tax on wealthy college endowments by tenfold or more. House Republicans already were considering an increase in the tax on college endowment earnings from 1.4 to 14% as part of Trump's tax bill. As the president raises the stakes in his fight with Harvard, Columbia, and other Ivy League schools, lawmakers are floating raising the rate as high as 21%, in line with the corporate tax rate. It appears no decisions have yet been made. In a letter blocking Harvard from new funding on Monday, the Trump administration drew attention to the school's largely tax-free $53 billion endowment, noting it's bigger than some nations' economies. Trump previously said he wants to see Harvard stripped of its tax-exempt status as he presses for reforms at colleges he accuses of indoctrinating students with radical left ideas. Similar rhetoric has been echoed by Republican lawmakers who question why wealthy colleges get tax breaks that businesses don't. In a letter to Brown University last month, Representative Troy Nils of Texas, who proposed legislation with the higher rate, said lawmakers are concerned about the priorities of universities that operate in a largely tax-free world. He questioned whether their endowments contribute to the public good. Republicans appear to be chipping away at the long-held notion that colleges provide the kind of public benefit that deserves to be protected from heavy taxation. And it's happening just as the House looks to cut or offset $1.5 trillion in spending as part of the president's sweeping tax bill. Colleges weren't taxed on their investment gains until Trump's 2017 tax package, which applied a 1.4% levy to schools that enroll at least 500 students and have a $500,000 per full-time student in the bank. A proposal floated by the House Ways and Means Committee in January called for a 14% endowment tax. Now, lawmakers are looking at a 21% tax among various options. As a senator, Vice President J.D. Vance proposed going to 35%. In 2023, the current tax generated $380 million from 56 colleges. Raising the tax to 14% would generate $10 billion for the federal government over 10 years, according to budget documents. On its own, it would have little impact on the House's goals for slashing government spending. The momentum for an increase reflects a broader attack on higher education, said Stephen Bloom, an assistant vice president of the American Council on Education, which represents the presidents of hundreds of colleges. "It's not a lot of money, so that can't be the motivating factor," Bloom said. Colleges see their endowments as stability for the future. The wealthiest ones run massive investment portfolios, and they usually draw about 5% of their returns to cover scholarships and other operating costs. Critics say colleges have been allowed to amass huge tax-free returns while charging students as much as $95,000 a year for tuition and fees. They point to Harvard, Yale, and others with tens of billions of dollars stored away. In total, roughly 50 colleges have endowments worth more than $1 billion, while the vast majority are much smaller. The tax proposals heighten financial uncertainty for colleges, including some that have already drawn deeper into their endowment reserves to make up for federal funding cuts, or are grappling with budget gaps amid enrollment decreases. At Davidson College, the most modest proposal would add $11 million a year to the school's tax bill, which was about $1 million last year, President Douglas Hicks said in an interview. That amount of money would be astronomical for our budget, he said. Davidson is among a small group of colleges that don't consider students' income in admissions and degree to cover their full financial need. Hicks said the proposed tax increases would take away the equivalent of full scholarships for up to 200 students. Hicks said if leaders are trying to reform higher education, there are much better incentives. Middlebury College in Vermont, a campus of about 3,000 students, cited the potential tax increase as a factor contributing to recent financial uncertainty. The school faces a budget deficit amid a dip in graduate school enrollment, but it's opting not to pull from its endowment over concerns about a tax hike. University leaders wrote in an April update, endowment tax increases that are currently under consideration could raise our tax bill from $1 million to $12 million. Item next, Design Commission to review outdoor patio. Dateline Normal. Having sat vacant in recent years, the lot east of Maggie Miley's Irish Pub may soon serve customers with a new outdoor patio. Normal's Uptown Design Review Commission will review the pub's plans to construct an outdoor patio adjacent to its current location at 126 East Beaufort Street on Monday. According to town documents, the lot was previously used for private parking and as an outdoor dining space during the COVID-19 pandemic. The proposed patio would be enclosed year-round by large semi-permanent planters housing boxwood bushes. Depending on the planter's material, they will be anchored to the ground if they are metal, or stained to mahogany color to match inside the pub if they are wooden. The lot would be resurfaced with new concrete along with a layer of slate, and a wooden walkway would lead out of the side door of the pub with a ramp heading toward the pub as well as a staircase leading out the back of the lot. String lights would also surround the patio area, and the entrance along Beaufort Street would feature an iron gate attached to an archway leading into the patio. In 2022, Maggie Miley's owner, Tyler Holloway, received approval from the Uptown Design Review Commission and Normal's Town Council to construct a two-story building on the lot, with the ground floor serving as expansion to the pub, according to town documents. Later that year, Holloway went back to the commission with a different plan to construct a beer garden at the lot until future date when a permanent building could be erected. The project has not come to light since. The plans for the proposed patio will be considered by the commission at its upcoming meeting at 4 p.m. Monday, May 12 in Uptown Station. If approved, construction of the patio is expected to be completed by July 20, according to town documents. Item next, cancer rates up for people under 50. Cancer before age 50 is rare, but increasing in the United States, and researchers want to know why. A new government study provides the most complete picture yet of early onset cancers, finding the largest increases are in breast, colorectal, kidney, and uterine cancers. Scientists from the National Cancer Institute looked at data that included more than 2 million cancers diagnosed in people 15 to 49 years old between 2010 and 2019. Of 33 cancer types, 14 cancers had increasing rates in at least one younger age group. About 63% of the early onset cancers were among women. Tim Rebeck of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, who studies cancer risk and was not involved in this research, said these kinds of patterns generally reflect something profound going on. We need to fund research that will help us understand. The findings were published Thursday in Cancer Discovery, a journal of the American Association for Cancer Research. The researchers compared cancer rates in 2019 to what would be expected based on 2010 rates. Breast cancer made up the largest share of the excess cancers, with about 4,800 additional cases. There were about 2,000 more colorectal cancers compared with what would be expected based on the 2010 rates. There were 1,800 more kidney cancers and 1,200 additional uterine cancers. Reassuringly, death rates were not rising for most cancers in the young adult age groups, though increasing death rates were seen for colorectal, uterine, and testicular cancers. Explanations will take more research. The big databases used for the study don't include information on risk factors or access to care. Theories abound, and a big meeting is planned later this year to bring together experts in the area. Lead author Meredith Shields of the National Cancer Institute said several of these cancer types are known to be associated with excess body weight, and so one of the leading hypotheses is increasing rates of obesity. Advances in cancer detection and changes in screening guidelines could be behind some other early diagnoses. For breast cancer, the trend toward women having a first child at older ages is a possible explanation. Pregnancy and breastfeeding are known to reduce risk. This isn't happening across the board. Cancer rates in people under 50 are going down for more than a dozen types of cancer, with the largest declines in lung and prostate cancers. Cigarette smoking has declined for decades, which likely accounts for the drop in lung cancer among younger adults. The drop in prostate cancer is likely tied to updated guidelines discouraging routine PSA testing in younger men because of concerns about overtreatment. Turning to local news on page A2, we have the headline, Lifelong Access Taps Kopp as New CEO. Carl Kopp has been appointed Chief Executive Officer of Lifelong Access, effective in June. He replaces Brian Wipperman, who left the CEO role in the fall. Chief Operating Officer Rebecca Brennan has been serving as interim CEO. Kopp has more than 15 years of nonprofit leadership experience and a personal commitment to advancing opportunities for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, according to a news release. Kopp previously served as executive director for a large multi-million dollar nonprofit in Racine, Wisconsin, which supports over 3,000 individuals with disabilities. In the news release, Kopp said, "I'm honored to join Lifelong Access, an organization whose mission aligns so closely with my personal and professional values. I look forward to being part of this organization in its next chapter of impact and innovation." Both of Kopp's children were student athletes at Illinois State University and Illinois Wesleyan University. His daughter and son-in-law currently reside in the area. Item next, Dodd named Director of Leadership Program. Shannon Dodd has been named Executive Director of the Multicultural Leadership Program, effective July 1. Dodd began her new role March 31, working alongside current Executive Director Cecilia Ruffin to onboard and ensure a smooth transition, according to a news release. Dodd has a variety of experiences as a nonprofit leader, including in organizational leadership, workforce development, and community engagement, the news release said. She also has over 25 years of experience in design, marketing, communications, and association management. Dodd said in the news release, "I'm honored to join the Multicultural Leadership Program, an organization that has built an incredible legacy of empowering diverse leaders and strengthening communities. The program is accepting applications for the class of 2026 until May 15. Visit bnmclp.org/apply for more information. Again, that URL is bnmclp.org/apply for more information." Turning to page A3, we have the headline, Poll, Buyers Want Tariff Costs Shown. Most Americans feel that businesses should display tariff costs in their pricing, according to a new poll which was released after one of the nation's largest retailers contemplated such a policy. In the latest Economist YouGov survey, 61% of respondents said that companies should show how much of a purchase price goes toward paying tariffs. Just 17% said they should not do this, and 22% were not sure. The question elicited mixed reactions from across the political spectrum. Among Democrats, 80% said they favored showing tariff costs in pricing, while just 6% opposed it. Similarly, 61% of independents supported the idea, while 17% were against it. Meanwhile, less than half of Republicans, 42%, expressed support for the idea, while 32% said they were opposed. Additionally, 78% of respondents said they believed Donald Trump's tariffs would slightly or significantly increase the price of goods they buy. Just 8% said they would have no effect, and 5% said they think tariffs would lead to price decreases. The poll was conducted with 1,850 U.S. adults between May 2nd and 5 and has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.4 percentage points. It comes after an April 20 Punch Bowl News report that stated Amazon was planning to show how Trump's tariffs, currently levied on imports from most countries, especially those from China, are affecting their products' prices. Amazon reported that the site will display how much of an item's cost is derived from tariffs, right next to the product's total listed price. That same day, Trump called Jeff Bezos, the founder of the Seattle-based e-commerce giant, to complain about the proposed policy, according to CNN. The president later confirmed the call took place, telling NBC News that Bezos was opposed to the move and reversed course immediately. In a statement released on April 29, Amazon said, "The team that runs our ultra-low-cost Amazon Haul store considered the idea of listing import charges on certain products. This was never approved and is not going to happen." Next, we have the headline, Columbia Suspends Protesters. Columbia University suspended dozens of students and barred alums and others who participated in a pro-Palestinian demonstration inside the school's main library this week, a school spokesperson said on Friday. The Ivy League institution in Manhattan placed more than 65 students on interim suspension and barred 33 others, including those from affiliated institutions such as Barnard College, from setting foot on campus. Interim suspension generally means that a student cannot come to campus, attend classes, or participate in other activities, according to Columbia's website. The university declined to say how long the disciplinary measures would be in place, saying only the decisions are pending further investigation. An undisclosed number of alums who participated in the protest also are prevented from entering school grounds, according to Columbia. Roughly 80 people were arrested in the Wednesday evening demonstration at the university's Butler Library. Most face trespassing charges, though some may also face disorderly conduct, police said. The mask-clad protesters pushed their way past campus security officers, raced into the building, and hung Palestinian flags and other banners on bookshelves. Some protesters also scrawled phrases on university furniture and picture frames, including, "Columbia will burn." Next, Soviet spacecraft falls back to Earth. A Soviet-era spacecraft plunged to Earth on Saturday, more than a half century after its failed launch to Venus. Its uncontrolled entry was confirmed by both the Russian Space Agency and European Union Space Surveillance and Tracking. The Russians indicated it came down over the Indian Ocean, but some experts were not so sure of the precise location. The European Space Agency's Space Debris Office also tracked the spacecraft's doom after it failed to appear over a German radar station. It was not immediately known how much, if any, of the half-ton spacecraft survived the fiery descent from orbit. Experts said ahead of time that some, if not all of it, might come crashing down, given it was built to withstand a landing on Venus, the solar system's hottest planet. The chances of anyone getting clobbered by spacecraft debris were exceedingly low, scientists said. Launched in 1972 by the Soviet Union, the spacecraft, known as Cosmos 482, was part of a series of missions bound for Venus. This one never made it out of orbit around Earth, stranded by a rocket malfunction. Much of the spacecraft came tumbling back to Earth within a decade of the failed launch. No longer able to resist gravity's tug as its orbit dwindled, the spherical lander, an estimated 3 feet across, was the last part of the spacecraft to come down. The lander was encased in titanium, according to experts, and weighed more than 1,000 pounds. Any surviving wreckage will belong to Russia under a United Nations treaty. Scientists, military experts, and others could not pinpoint in advance precisely when or where the spacecraft might come down. Solar activity added to the uncertainty, as well as the spacecraft's deteriorating condition after so long in space. Some observers were disappointed by the uncertainty over the exact whereabouts of the spacecraft's grave. Dutch scientist Marco Langbroek said via X, "If it was over the Indian Ocean, only the whales saw it." As of Saturday afternoon, the U.S. Space Command had yet to confirm the spacecraft's demise as it collected and analyzed data from orbit. The U.S. Space Command routinely monitors dozens of reentries each month. What set Cosmos 482 apart and earned it extra attention from government and private space trackers was that it was more likely to survive reentry, according to officials. It also fell uncontrolled, without any intervention by flight controllers who normally target the Pacific and other vast expanses of water for old satellites and other space debris. We will close this first half hour with today's Flick Fact, a regular Pantograph feature. Can you name the popular downtown Bloomington restaurant since 1993 that before that was once a hardware store, one of the first Fannie Mae candy stores, a one-time law office said to be shared by Abraham Lincoln and S.L. Gridley, and later a rough-and-ready downtown bar? The answer is, it's Rosie's Pub. The bar it succeeded was called the 20 Grand Tap. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph, dated Monday, May 12, 2025. Please stay tuned.